15 to 20 million.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860 AM, serving southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio. And anyone from around the USA or around the world can tune in simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. If you have Alexa in the house, just go over Alexa 860 AM Radio. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be a very lively broadcast. We have a lot of things to say, and I'm very pleased that all of our panel members are here with us today, because we are, you know, looking at so many things that we've done in a positive way for years and years, and we're watching now on a national level how people are doing little things that they should have been doing in a big way for many, many years. Our theme is Support American Made First. And with that in mind, I want to say a welcome to Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, national small business advocate, Rich Loges, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, Curtis Ellis from the American First Project, Henry Chaplinsky is our engineer, and I am Michael Blihash. Today's opening message announcing the program is very good, because it says we have the power. And Henry and his family made that intro a few years ago. We have the power. Oh, yes, we do have the power. And we have the power mainly because 70% of America's economy is based on consumer spending. But we've had some difficult weeks lately, and I know that all of you have not been able to go out and do your regular thing. But hopefully, as time goes on, we'll be able to see real leadership in Washington come forward to lead us back to prosperity and back to being a great America again. I know that we can't rush it overnight. We have to take things very cautiously. And we also can't blame the American people for the coronavirus. We can't blame America's businesses, large and small, for the coronavirus. We can't blame America's families or the American people at large. We really have to take a good look at what happened. We have to blame the Chinese Communist government for not letting their people know that the virus was going through China and making the Chinese people sick. Of course, they think of things differently, and they simply don't care what went on. But we care. And if the Chinese government had let the World Health Organization know that this was happening way back in last October and November, we would have had very little problems as we're having today. And since the Chinese people had that virus and travel all over Europe now and come to America, that virus was spread around by some people that didn't even know that they had it. Today, America and over 140 countries of the world are now not being physically attacked by the communist government of China, but we're being attacked by the Chinese government because they didn't tell the people of the world that a virus had been spreading through China. And if they had told the people of the world, especially the World Health Organization, we would be way far from this problem that we are experiencing today. So the communist government of China has to be reviewed. We have to do the thing with the tariffs. We have to start looking for more American made where we shop. And the list goes on and on. I'm going to turn to our panel, and I'm going to ask them to let it all out today. I would like to hear what they think of different things that are going on and how they would like to see things change in the future. How about we welcome Curtis Ellis. Curtis, tell me everything.
Hey, it's great to be here, socially distanced from. Yeah.
We are
the rest
all
of the
doing
world.
Our 6 feet
That's right.
or
I've got
more.
The phone. I have the phone 6 feet from my mouth, and I've got 6 feet of a phone cable, so the mouthpiece is 6 feet from the handset, and I'm in New York City right now, and now I'm not allowed to leave, right? I can't go to Florida. They said if I go to Florida, I've got to lock myself in a cage for 14 days. I'm waiting for Mayor de Blasio to come over here and chain me to the radiator, but that hasn't happened yet, so I'm still free to talk to you. It's, you know, very interesting. We're seeing a lot of media hysteria. Everybody in the Democrat media complex is very eager to blame President Trump for this virus and for the shortage of face masks and for the shortage of ventilators and the shortage of surgical gowns. And what you're not hearing, and really what they should be talking about 24/7, is who's really to blame for this: the Chinese Communist Party.
Absolutely.
And the people who enabled and built up the Chinese Communist Party by sending all of our factories and production and research and development laboratories to China. Because that's what's going on here. We can't make face masks because all of the factories, most of the factories, there are a couple left, most of the factories that make face masks, N95 face masks, are in China.
And, you know, you're right, Curtis. And the thing that concerns me most is if China wants to supply the world with face masks and drugs and everything, that's wonderful. We're in America. We should have a big outlet. We should have a big manufacturing base to do our drugs, which was the way it was for 150 years. Our drug companies took care of everything. It's only in the last 30 years, as they snuck those companies over to China, that we're experiencing all of these problems.
And it became a rush for the exits, a mad rush for the exits, after 2000, when we gave China permanent normal most favored nation status and dropped tariffs on a permanent basis. Prior to that, it was up for an annual review. If we opened our eyes and admitted that China was abusing its people, the human rights review that was done on an annual basis, the tariffs would have snapped back in place. Bill Clinton and gotta say the names, where give credit where credit's due. Bill Clinton, Mitch McConnell, and Joe Biden were the cheerleaders for getting rid of that. And then in 2002, the last penicillin factory in America closed, moved to China. 2004, the last aspirin factory in America closed, moved to China. And to this day, I saw a press release, the Association for Affordable Medicines, which, everybody wants affordable medicines, right? This is the generic drug manufacturers, all the companies from Pfizer to some name you never heard of that makes the generic substitutions for brand name drugs. They put out their talking points, again, justifying globalization. Oh, we don't want to make, sometime in the far distant future, in a faraway galaxy, we can talk about making drugs in America, but we are able to make affordable medicines and lower prices for Americans because of our globalized supply chains, and we don't want to interrupt those.
Well, so, you're right, Curtis. That's all I've been hearing from everybody. And, you know, the thing that really drives everybody nuts now is I tell them to go into the pharmacy and ask the pharmacy, how much different so do you feel the drug cost would be if it was made in America? And the pharmacy said, well, it probably would be somewhere comparable because, you know, we put out feelers and proposals for the drugs as the main pharmacy, the ShopRite pharmacy or whichever of the pharmacies. And they have to do just that, give you a quote. So all these excuses are just
all
stupid.
These excuses. I'll tell you, that's the one thing these companies are great at manufacturing in America: excuses.
Right.
Excuses for doing anything. As I said before, and I'll say it again, First, they tell us we don't need manufacturing in America because it's a tiny percentage of our economy. Most people are employed in service industries, as we're learning now that they've closed all the hotels, restaurants, gyms, spas, nail salons, et cetera, et cetera. All these service industries are closed, so most people are now out of work. Well, if there's only a small percentage of people involved in manufacturing, well, then we can afford to pay a fraction of a percent more for something that's only going to impact a fraction of the economy.
Right.
So stop playing games with us. Now, what we're seeing is that all of these companies, all of these countries that we've now, that we are now totally dependent on for our medicines, for our respirators, for everything else, are now putting export restrictions in place. They're doing what any logical person or country would do: take care of their own people first.
Right.
So most of the ventilators are made in Europe. Europe is not exporting those ventilators. China, they need ventilators for their sick people, so they're not exporting ventilators. So where's the United States? We're left, we're at the back of the line, because the geniuses from Harvard Business School decided we could make a fraction of a cent more and boost the stock price by putting all of the manufacturing overseas, where we can escape labor regulation, environmental regulation, taxes, et cetera, and use slave labor. So now those same people are using this as a justification to somehow justify keeping the supply chains in place. Now, here's something. I've done some original reporting here, an investigation. And looking at ventilators, everybody's got the ventilator blues now. Everybody needs a ventilator, can't get one, because the entire world is shopping for ventilators. And the media seems to have a hard time understanding that when you're talking about the physical production of physical goods, you can't just snap your fingers and increase production. It takes, you actually have to get parts and put them together someplace and manufacture those parts and then assemble them. And if everybody's trying to get those same parts at the same time, it gets tight. And plus, companies are going to, if there's, like Cuomo says he needs 30,000 ventilators. Well, okay. Everybody else is saying they need 30,000 ventilators. The Dutch Netherlands has ordered 2,000 ventilators. That's this year. That's this month. That's right now. Next year, they're not going to order another 30,000 ventilators. So why am I going to build a factory to make the surge capacity, surge to meet the demand today, if next year, yeah, nobody's going to want these ventilators anymore? Well, anyway, what I found is there are four companies in America that are making ventilators here in America: Medtronic, GE Health, Philips, and the fourth one whose name escapes me right now, but that's not important. Philips basically has been giving all of its suppliers the runaround. People have called Philips and say, hey, one of its suppliers, they make parts for the Philips ventilators, and they say, how many more do you want? I usually give you 1,000, you know, a month or 1,000 a year. How many more do you want? And it took them weeks to get back to even get an answer for anybody to take the call over at Philips. When they finally did take the call, they said, well, go from 1,000 to 1,200. And then they learned that the Philips production line was down because they have a plant in Pittsburgh. The production line was down because they couldn't get circuit boards. Their supplier of circuit boards is in China. And Philips didn't have a backup supplier for circuit boards. So the production line was down. Now, Medtronic makes ventilators. They put out a bid. They're going to have an auction, a reverse auction, in a couple of days. They asked for bids on 11,000 different parts. And they're asking suppliers, give us your bid, give us a price quote on these 11,000 different parts. However, the request they put out for quotes, the RFQ, did not include specifications for the parts. Now, how am I supposed to bid and tell you how much it's going to it's going to cost you for me to sell you a widget or a screw or a sub widget or whatever, if you don't tell me the dimensions of that widget, if you don't give me the specifications? Is it a left-handed screw or a right-handed screw? Is it a machine screw? Is it a flathead screw? Is it a wood screw? What are you talking about here? How big is the circuit board? What's the surface area of the plastic enclosure you're asking for? So you got to wonder if they're serious about this. Or are they going through the motions? Are they incompetent? Are they going through the motions? Philips gave an interview of the CEO of Philips. It's a Dutch company, told a Dutch newspaper that Philips is on the phone with its competitors, a German company Siemens and its main competitors, to discuss how to ramp up production. Well, that's a cartel. That's illegal in this country. So you got to wonder, if we have an international cartel on the production of ventilators, and they're more interested in protecting their proprietary supply lines and protecting their most of which are in China and overseas, if they're more interested in protecting their proprietary technology and supply lines than in producing ventilators. If you were to bring in, and by the way, the Michigan Automotive Suppliers Association has seen no evidence whatsoever that its members, the people who supply the audio industry, have seen no evidence whatsoever that the big three automakers have reached out to their suppliers and asked them to retool to make ventilator parts. I mean, this is just, that's what's going on. That's what's going on now, that there's a lot of talk, and the American, what's left of our industry, of our machining and die casting and plastic injection molding industry, these people are ready to go, but nobody's asking them to step up.
Well, that's why, Curtis, I think it's time for a new American jobs advocate in Washington. And I'd love to see you and a few other people on such a committee, because right now the people are able to blindfold you. Oh, don't worry about it. We're going to be able to get things back to normal. Nothing will be back to normal until our American people have their jobs, have enough
That's
jobs.
Right.
Service industry, I'm telling you, I said that 20 years ago, is going to turn out to be a flop. They wanted them to be slaves in other parts of the world, and we're going to bring it here and sell it as a service industry. This never made sense. I wanted, before I go to Mark, I just want to alert everyone that there is an interview with Curtis Ellis posted on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com from CPAC. Check it out. You'll find it very, very interesting. And Curtis sent out a very interesting link the other day about not being able to get masks and things like that. China's government refused to sell us masks, which disturbed me greatly to see such a report circulating out there at a time when we were buying 90% of the masks we use. They now say, no, we want to keep the masks for ourselves and sell them into another market, the European market, where we can get more money. Well, you know where I would tell them. Those that are starting to make those masks in America better keep up the mask production line. Mark Andel, can I turn to you for a minute? How are you doing, Mark, during this crazy time in American history?
You know, how you doing, guys? Mike, Curtis, Rich, Larkin, Henry. Just different times. You know, I've been through many, many struggles through the last 30 years. But here we go again. We had a great first quarter going. I'd say about, you know, it was two Fridays ago. I was heading on a cruise, and that got canceled on my way down to Florida. So personally, it hit me. And then we got stuck in Florida. Well, I got back last week, and things were changing by the hour. We have some essential operations here, but we closed four of the stores. And, you know, we kept the main store open as a grocery store, convenience store. But, you know, odd things, toilet paper was we're not sure why toilet paper was the number one commodity. Everybody wanted. We sold over a semi-load last week. And nobody really knows why it's been toilet paper, but it was crazy. We even got some to the Buffalo Fire Company yesterday, and we're out of it. But everything's changed, Mike, even with General Welding. You know, we have about four or five essentials with the military, oil, mining, and grocery stores, and distribution and fulfillment. But, you know, we let about 30, 35 people go at this point. Some self-quarantined, every day's changing, so we've lost many different talents. It's a hidden, you know, cash flow is always the name of the game. Cash flow is the oxygen of any company. So I got to go into survival mode, and, you know, where this goes, I've got friends that have personal businesses. New York, we're tied. Curtis, you're in New York City, and, you know, I'm in West New York, but whatever happens in New York City happens in West New York. So we're tied. We believe in, you know, taking care of this illness for sure, and protecting our employees and families. There's no doubt with that, but the effect on the business is amazing. Even small businesses, I've got a lot of friends, and Larkin would relate well, that are just small mom-and-pop businesses. They don't get to collect unemployment. They have no income, so they've been shut off. It's worse than the recession. I went through 07, 08, 09. I went from a $12 million business to a $5 million. I lost $7 million in sales in that recession. 2016, I've lost $3 million in sales, and we crawled 4 years out of that hole, and we were just starting to rock and roll, and then this hit. So it's hard. They're talking to stimulus. I know it was signed last night. I never got a dollar out of the stimulus package of 07, 08. I always had that mailbox open, but never got a dollar. Small business, Mike, we've got to talk about the small business that this really kills, because no income is no income.
No income is no income, you
it's
know.
No income, Mike. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends. One owns a salon, one owns a, you know, landscape business. New York is shut off right now, 100% unless you're essential. And what I found, even though I was able to stay open partially, so I'm a sub of a prime. So my prime, and then they've got me as a sub, and then I've got subs that supply parts, but my subs don't have essential. I have Canada shut down that I get some my military products for to finish my defense systems, which I can't get because Canada's shut off. So every day is a new chapter here, Mike. The whole ticket is, will you have enough cash flow to pay the guys you have without the income? Our counters are closed with the landscapers and all them service industries we cater to. We fill a lot of propanes and things like that, some survival stuff. So, Mike, to say, you know, we've been through a lot, but this is tough times for small business.
You're right, and you know, most of this is as a result of the communist government of China simply not informing the World Health Organization, not putting out an alert, and in fact, did they not only put out an alert? They tried to conceal where the coronavirus came from.
And
they
tried to conceal
it.
I'd like to add a little more. You know, the Made in America movement, we've been involved. Curtis, thanks for all you do. Rich and Larkin. Mike, it's alive more than it's ever been. Tony Jr. here that runs my website, 11 Platform Social Media, it went organic. People, finally the light bulb went on. You know, why do we, national security, national health, why are we making certain things overseas? Now, we've been talking about this, Mike, for 10-plus years, but all of a sudden I've got calls from the heads of my town, Don Buckner. Everybody's like, you know, now everybody wants to wonder why we make things overseas. They're coming to the store. Boy, I rode by the store. I never knew what was here. Why do we do this? Why do we do that, Mark? But the movement's alive, and it's, you know, it's unprecedented, so this is going to change the country for sure. The Made in America is strong. The movement's strong. The talk's strong. But, you know, it's amazing it takes something like this, a crisis, a national crisis, to wake people up, Mike.
You know, Mark, I listen to the remarks of President Trump the other day, saying that we have to get back to some level of normalcy. And I think this is something that we have to really focus on. It's like we saw this, what's going on with the coronavirus. We saw what has to be done. We are trying to reduce the cases. We're bringing forth the testing to get the people forward so that they can, you know, get better. And we have to really have a plan. If you go on a trip to Florida or you go on a hiking trip or something, you make plans. America has to make plans so that we all get on the same sheet of music and get the country moving again. Otherwise, we are going to have a worse sickness in this country with people ill, not being able to support themselves. You're going to see more devastation than anyone would believe, because people have, in many cases, their life invested in those businesses. And if the business can't move, that's really very destructive. So, I mean, I understand we have to put the virus, number one, and number two, there has to be a full plan. And I hope that they're working on it now as we speak to get the wheels of America's small businesses, big businesses, and all businesses moving again. And in that same outlook, I'd like to see how they're going to help restore some of the businesses that could be returned to America in a bigger and faster way.
And
so
Mike,
that we're never left without having to be able to pick up the phone and call another company located in America to see if they can be able to supply us for any reason, not just in health products, but in any reason. Yes.
Yep. You know, Mike, a lot of businesses, I already had a couple that are not going to reopen. You know, unfortunately, I hate to hear that because they were already struggling. People forget how hard we were struggling even from 2016. That was never talked about. And then we crawled back up to where we're at. So it's just a shame, and I want to make, you know, a big emphasis. Larkin, you'll know the people how hard it is to start a business, let alone get capital. And SBA was offering loans and whatnot. We were on the site last week, but the site crashed. It wasn't ready for it. It's still not ready for it. The time is everything. The question is, when does this get turned back on? That length of time is critical to the survival of these businesses.
It is critical. And people have, I have to say that this is a time that all levels of government, I've never seen people in Washington, in the states, in the local communities working so well together.
Amen.
This is historic.
Thank you.
However, when this crisis is over, are they going to work together in such a positive way to continue the good business practices that we see and know that they are able of doing? Maybe they would do even more things than we can come up with. I would like to see that happen. I'd like to see Nancy and Chuck and everybody else bring forth all sorts of ideas to focus on America first. Number one, we have to always look out for ourselves first. If your house, your door to your front house is okay, then you can worry about your neighbor's front door. But if your front door is broken, you should not be concerned about your neighbor's door first. This is what we've done because people found more profit coming from foreign-made products. They said, the hell with the American people. 30 years ago, maybe that was okay because there were more businesses operating in America. But during the last 30 years, over 70,000 businesses left America for what they call better lands, like China, India, all these other places, for bigger profits. But when those products come to this country, I do a lot of looking around for stuff. I question a lot of people, and these managers in stores, when they see me, they melt immediately because I'm going to ask a question they don't want to answer. I say, what is the difference? Is there anybody in the store that can see the inventory supply? Is there something that's coming in from America that I can promote? It's always, well, it's the suppliers, it's the merchandisers, it's always 1,000 excuses. It's time now to get all the suppliers, the merchandisers, and all on one sheet of music and start getting them to tell us what they have that's made in America. Mark, this is going to be your 10th anniversary this April. I hope that everything is restored in time for your 10th anniversary.
And just, Mike, one other thing that, you know, we're a destination, so a lot of our buses, you know, we had the Gold Star Mother, 2 buses coming in April. A lot of the buses, the travel industry took a huge hit. So, you know, a lot of buses have been canceled and coming. So it affects so many different industries, and it's hard to make that back, you know. But we will continue. Hopefully we can have our 10-year event in May.
And I hope, Mark, that When this is done, as I said, I'm hoping they're making a plan to bring everything back to normalcy in Washington right now. And I hope that the states are doing that, too. That what we're going to do, let's give it some kind of a time frame. Maybe this time in April, this time in May. Let's do something where everybody can feel I'll be able to get back to making a living. I'll be able to get back to feeling good about myself, allowing myself to feel that my investment is going somewhere. Dr. Rich Loges, tell me everything.
Wow, Michael, good morning. Curtis, Mark, Larkin, our listeners. I have two main points, Michael, I want to bring up in no order of importance. I just want to reiterate a point, if you'll forgive my the repetition here. I would just like to reiterate, when all is said and done, when the dust settles, you can make a strong case that the four dumbest groups in America will be anti-vaccine people, open borders advocates, democratic socialists, and globalists, Curtis. Right there, those four groups. And what's actually really pathetic, Michael, is that Republicans are in three of four of those groups. And I want to give a shout out, as me and Larkin had a little, we tailgated before today's show, me and Larkin. I want to give a shout out nationwide to our hospital workers, medical community, healthcare workers, Michael. This is what a first world health system looks like. The day that human beings are clairvoyant is the day that Will Curtis be able to be fully prepared for something that we've never seen before. Whatever the criticisms, Michael, of, well, we started slow, well, we were delayed, right. Like any human being would have been who can't predict the future, Michael. And if you want to talk about China and globalism, Curtis, I have a new article out today where I talk about the Democrat media industrial complex and its irreparability. It's beyond repair. The Democrat media industrial complex is beyond repair. And as a former journalist, Larkin, I'm asked all the time, why can't the press just be, why can't it just be, you know, honest one day, Michael? Why can't it just be relatively objective for one day? And I say to these people, you asking why can't the D-Mike be honest for just one day is like asking why didn't Jeffrey Dahmer just stop killing? It's not in their nature to stop. Why didn't he just stop killing? Why doesn't the D-Mike just be honest one day? It's the same question. It's the same principle, Michael. It is beyond repair. And all we have watched, Curtis, all we have watched in the last few weeks is one, hindsight is 2020 revisionist history over and over and over again. Do we sit here and say that 9/11 is the fault of President Clinton, who had numerous opportunities to strike at Bin Laden but decided not to with the information he had? And then President George W. Bush, Michael, who had recycled data that said Bin Laden was looking to hijack airplanes. We don't sit here and blame them. Do we sit here and say that Obama is to blame? I don't, personally. Do we sit here and say President Obama is to blame for ISIS? Remember when he said, just because the JV team puts on a Lakers uniform doesn't make them Kobe Bryant? Well, tens of thousands of ISIS deaths later, President Obama was a little bit he was a little bit off, Michael, in his assessment. Do we sit here and blame? No, of course not. I want to give a shout out to just how well, overall, we have handled what has happened. Our healthcare workers, our hospital workers, Michael, everyone, the way that we've come through on this. And for those who ask why didn't we get testing kits earlier? There's a very simple mathematical answer, because the testing kit ratio of accuracy was about 1 out of 3 correct. So if I told you today, Michael, that if you leave your house, there's a 2/3 chance you're not going to come home alive, you probably wouldn't leave the house. This is how we responded to it. Man will never defeat nature, but the United States, our health system, for all its flaws, we were better equipped to handle this than any other nation in the world, and that has been affirmed by numerous global studies, which, again, Curtis, I'm not always a fan of global. Let me be clear. I'm not always a fan of global studies. But I like Johns Hopkins University, Michael, and Johns Hopkins just said, look, U.S. was the best to be able to handle this pandemic. Why? Because you can't be ready for everything, Michael, but when something happens, your preparedness is what is going to help us deal with it. And that is exactly what has happened right now. So in January, when the World Health Organization publicly stated, oh, China has assured us it's not contagious, we said, okay, well, we generally listen to the World Health Organization. They seem to be innocuous. It's what they said. And then, of course, that was incorrect. Then the head of the World Health Organization said, listen to this quote, because I just wrote about it, Michael. The head of the World Health Organization, when the president put the travel ban in place to prevent more bodies from spreading it, the head of the World Health Organization turned around and said, being globally connected is our weakness, but it's also our greatest strength. I mean, Joseph Goebbels himself couldn't have said it better. It's our weakness, Curtis, but it's also our strength.
So now, look, the World Health Organization is completely subordinated to the Chinese Communist Party.
The head of the World Health Organization was lobbied to be in place by China. And it was not even a Chinese guy.
No, and he was in the communist government of Ethiopia. He's a member of a communist party in Ethiopia, the People's Revolutionary Party of Ethiopia. The guy's a total shill. Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, is known as the city that China built.
Hear that, Michael? Yeah, guys, hear that? So I don't want to hear anything about hindsight. I don't want to hear any of that bull. Because nobody, unless he's clairvoyant, this isn't even a pro-Trump statement. It doesn't matter who the president would be. Our system, our health system, this is what a first world system looks like. And when all is said and done, Michael, if you want to add into the anti-vaccine people, democratic socialists, globalists, and open borders people, anyone walking around talking about full socialized medicine, this should be the death knell. This should be the death knell for it. Because you see what's happening now? So truly nationalized medicine, this would be the new normal for healthcare every single day. Larkin, am I mistaken or not?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head. Last week, Curtis and I ended the show by having a discussion about the irony of a $2 trillion bailout for our small businesses and our citizens. And I, of course, had to point out the irony of we probably would borrow the money from China, which really... kind of disturbed me. But after I hung up, I gave considerable thought to the very points that Curtis had made. And as a member of a board of directors of a nonprofit in Philly and a part of SCORE and a few other things, started to talk to a lot of my friends in those organizations, only to discover that Curtis's was probably right, more right than wrong. We don't know anything about what's going on here as far as this pandemic is concerned. We don't know how serious it is or how non-serious it is, but we have to react. We've painted ourselves into a corner where all of the surgical masks are sitting over in China, the country where Wuhan is and where this all originated. The irony falls on deaf ears, though, because journalism and the public and the anti-Trumpers want to blame our president for the situation that we're in now. It's just unimaginable, and it's stupidity beyond stupidity. But I, Michael, wanted to take just a few minutes to help our small business listeners. First of all, for all of the criticism that I've given the city of Philadelphia in their spending habits and the way the Democrats have run that city for the last 25,000 days, I must give them a kudo for a small business relief package that they have put together for the small businesses in Philadelphia. I suggest that anybody who operates a business inside Philly, you can live in East Jibip if you want to, but if your business is located in Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia is ready to issue grants of sizable amounts to small businesses to keep them going. If they're essential to stay open, if they're non-essential to survive the stalemate that we have faced right now, I would suggest that all of our listeners go to my friend David O's Instagram page and take a look at the program, review it. It is a guaranteed loan program that if you do what they suggest you do, which obviously gives an advantage to the citizens of Philadelphia and to their potential employees, that loan can turn into a grant. A standing ovation for the city of Philadelphia for stepping forward with cash. I have no idea where they got it, and I don't want to know at this point, because beyond the irony that has been created by this situation, we have a need to protect our future. And Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia, has done that. I would also like to inform all of our small business listeners and individuals of an SBA package that has been put together. I have been privileged to hear a lot of the elements of it. It's a great package. As we all know, when disaster struck Nashville with the recent hurricane, the SBA is in there lickety-split with federal budgeted money to help the small businesses get back up on their feet quickly. They are treating this pandemic as very much the same, but with bigger dollars and money, hopefully, knock on wood, is easier for the small business person to get quickly in order to sustain his or her business. So I would suggest that all of our listeners that are small business people go to the SBA website. It's all over the cover. It's everything that's been talked about. And if Nancy Pelosi will get her special interest self out of the way of this bill with her $400 million for Planned Parenthood in the current relief bill, with her $300 million funding of the Endowment of the Arts, with her who knows how much to relieve the U.S. Post Office of all of its debt, all of this in our pandemic, the bill that we're currently in, the $2 trillion bill. How dare she? This has absolutely nothing to do with the problem that she claims that she's holding out for the American worker.
I don't know who she's talking about there. I really don't. I've been listening to it too, and it really is idioticness as far as I'm concerned. In fact, you know, Larkin, we were talking last week and maybe even the week before, we talked about tariffs on foreign-made goods. I really think, Curtis, in your working with many of your people, maybe we should have the tariff fund go into a stimulus fund, like a rainy day fund, in case something like this comes up again, where we would not have to put up with somebody like Pelosi or anybody else with crazy ideas. Yes, Larkin.
So if I could just get through this small business assistance element of it. So the SBA is the foundation. All of the small outside volunteer organizations that work directly with and are funded by the SBA, SCORE, the Service Corps of Retired Executives, SBDCs, Wharton has one, Temple has one. These are the small business development centers, and the WBE's Women Business Enterprise Centers, and that would be the Women's Opportunity Resource Center, whose board I sit on. Please, as small business people today, regardless of a complete lack of knowledge of where the $2 trillion is going to ultimately surface for small businesses, you have to get in the queue. You have to start working on your survival. And this issue will be filled in by the SBA when they finally get X number of dollars and they can put this program together. This will all happen very quickly because the SBA recognizes, as it did in Nashville when the hurricane came through, our small business is still over 50% of the GDP in this country. Our small businesses are in trouble.
Big trouble.
T-R-O-U-B, big trouble. And we have to come to their aid just as absolutely quickly as possible. SBDC, SCORE, WBEs, get to work right now. Read the first three cover pages of the SBA and get in line, get in queue, so that these organizations and the SBA can help you with money. There's actually an element in one of them that I heard about, and I won't even point a finger at it. It's a sizable amount of money. If you are a business that can stay open and your employees want to work and you're considered essential, they'll lend you this. There is a source for money up to $50,000 to $75,000 that if you employ your employees and don't lay them off and pay them, it'll turn into a grant, not a loan.
Yes.
So the government and America is ready to stand up and fight for its small businesses. Small business owners need to get in line and queue up in the right place and go after this money.
And, you know, Larkin, one of the things I'd love to see more and more of our small businesses be able to seek out American-made and American-assembled products, because that's going to help a lot of our consumers to do their thing to help those small businesses. Right now, people are saying, oh, all the small businesses, all they're doing is selling foreign-made stuff. No, that's where we come with the 50-50 balance. And just to add one more thing to the Small Business Administration, you can look that up on the web. And if you're a small business or you know small business people, please do spread Larkin's word. I'd like to see a rainy day fund for a situation like this. And it should come from tariffs on foreign-made goods. Curtis, what do you think of that idea?
I think that's a great idea. I think the tariffs on foreign-made goods should be made permanent. The tariffs on Chinese goods should be made permanent. We can, as an emergency measure, cancel or suspend the tariffs on medical supplies coming from China, because we need them right now, to the degree that China's even sending them or letting them be exported. But they should be made permanent. That would give business the certainty that we always keep hearing. Business loves certainty. That would give business the certainty to build factories in America, because they know that if they build them in China, they're going to be paying the tax, and they're going to be paying a very stiff tariff that makes up the difference of all the cheap labor and subsidies they get from China, that it's no cheaper to make stuff in China and other countries, if you have to pay a tariff at the border. That's how we built this country. And yes, dedicate that money to a rainy day fund to help small business,
right?
Because it was large businesses. It was the Fortune 50 corporate conglomerates that drove our industries offshore. They consolidated, they bought up the smaller enterprises, they vertically integrated their supply chains, and then they moved them offshore. We need competition in this country. We need small and medium-sized businesses competing with each other. That, too, is what made America great and made America strong. That is free enterprise. Five corporations owning everything is not free enterprise. That's a cartel. And our economy has become far too concentrated, consolidated, and cartelized. And I think all the money that comes from tariffs should be used to in this rainy day fund that you talk about, and our policies need to be promoting competition and promoting small businesses.
You know, Curtis, when people go from these various groups, various agencies of the government, go to the budget hearings there in the Congress and the Senate, how is it that no one was informing the general public that all these drugs and all were being made outside of America? I mean, for the military and everybody else, the drugs were being made outside of America. I don't think that's great for our security. I don't think that we should ever allow anything less than 50% of everything that's made in America to be sold in America. I think that maybe this next Congress and the president has to focus on a plan like this, that we have to have 50% stability of everything in this country. And the American people may even have to go and put that on a ballot referendum and say, this is what we want. How can a country allow 80 or 90% of its products to be made outside the country and just have them brought in and sold at all our major stores to people with the same brand names that they had when they were made in America? It's nice that China and everybody else bought up all our business, all the names and all the rights to the names. How about America? These people in Congress, each one of them, should be brought to task to tell us why they sat there and made no complaint to the people. They didn't make a complaint when they were running for re-election. That said, by the way,
they were paid to shut up.
They were paid to do a job by the taxpayers.
Yeah.
But the big companies give them the money for the seed money for them to go to re-election, so they keep their mouth shut.
Exactly. You follow the money. It's really absolutely disgusting. I mean, somebody made money. We have laws on the books that says the Pentagon must buy American when they buy their drugs, when they buy the penicillin, when they buy boots and shoes and uniforms. The government is supposed to buy American. Number one, we issued waivers left and right.
Right.
Oh, well, it's not. We'll let you make an exception this time. Exceptions became the rule. And then also we signed these free trade agreements with these so-called free trade agreements with these various countries. And included in the free trade agreement is what they call national treatment. We treat goods. We give other countries. If we have a free trade agreement with a country, that country is treated as if it is America. So when we have a free trade agreement with Mexico, anything made in Mexico qualifies for made in America. So the TSA uniforms, people that screen the pat you down and feel you up when you get on an airplane, their uniforms are made in Mexico. That's government procurement. U.S. taxpayer dollars are buying the uniforms for U.S. taxpayer-funded citizens, our officers at the airports. The uniforms are made in Mexico.
And, Curtis, they went around
they
the Berry
Act. National treatment.
Yeah, the Berry Act was made for that, too.
Exactly. The Berry Act. And John McCain fought against it every chance he got. He said, oh, this is a boondoggle. This is wasteful spending, buying things, using taxpayer dollars to put Americans to work to make things. That's just wasteful spending because that's the kind of hairpin he was. And it's disgusting. We gutted all of that. We gutted all this Buy American stuff. And it's somebody made money on it, folks. Somebody made money on it.
I'm going to.
Not you and me.
We're getting close to the end of our broadcast. I just want to ask each one of you to give us a few sentences about what you think would be best to get America's economy up and running again. Curtis, I'll start with you.
Buy American, keep Americans employed, buy more of what we make. Make more of what we buy. Watch out for your fellow American on a health basis as well. We need to be careful, and then we can go back to work. Don't take things for granted, respect your fellow citizen, social distance, stay 6 feet apart. Older people, more susceptible people, be extra careful. You stay in so other people can go back to work. And we want a country. We want a country when this is over. And if we don't get back to work in a safe way, in a responsible way, and quickly, we won't have a country.
Well said. Larkin, how would you like to add to that?
Well, I think Curtis said it well. The most unique Americans, to me, on a gather-all basis, are entrepreneurs. And I would say to my fellow entrepreneur brothers and sisters, you're really the basis that's going to drag us out of the dirt. So take advantage of every opportunity that's being given to you by a government that wants to see everything return to normal, and get out there and get the job done. This is not bigger than America.
Very well said. And Mark, let's hear your opinion on it.
Yeah, no, we're American strong. You know, one country, one goal. We got great, great people, citizens. But believe God, we trust in God, and we'll get through this. We'll get to the other side. Support them small businesses in your towns. They need you now.
Very good. And National Small Business Weekend is going to be taking place next week. So make sure you go out and help the businesses that are in your community that are offering foods and all the allowable stuff, with the hope that it's going to be able to be opened up in a shorter period of time than we expected. Rich Logis, let's have your thoughts on this issue.
Everyone, be cautious. Don't panic. Just wash your damn hands, please. Thank you.
Okay.
And stay out of Florida. And if you're coming to Florida, stay out of Florida on behalf of me, Larkin, and Jim Austin.
Don't touch my face, because I can't touch
stay
it myself.
Stay out of Florida.
Well, I'm so glad that we all had an opportunity to talk to each other. We're all at a distance. We're obeying all the rules and regs. And now we want our people in Washington to do the same. We have to make America great. You and I, by the way we buy things, by the way we support our businesses, and by the way we speak of one another. And ladies and gentlemen, until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11 here on 860 AM, I want to wish you and yours the very best. Barbara will be back tomorrow, and also on Friday and Sunday. We have a lot of things. Barbara's doing a great job here on the daily broadcast. And thanks to everyone who is supporting our efforts. Remember, you'll be able to hear a rebroadcast of today's show after an hour or so. We'll have it up on the broadcast. Spread the word, AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Do widzenia, dziękuję za wszystko.